18. End of an investigation. Commissioner Enderby's eyes narrowed, and he glared at Bailey. What are you going to do? You tried something like this in Fastolf's dome yesterday morning. Not again, please. Bailey nodded. I know. I was wrong the first time. He thought fiercely, also the second time, but not now. Not this time, not... The thought faded out, spluttering like a micropile under a positronic damper. He said, judge for yourself, Commissioner. Grant that the evidence against me has been planted. Go that far with me and see where it takes you. Ask yourself, who could have planted that evidence? Obviously, only someone who'd known I was in the Williamsburg plant yesterday evening. All right. Who would that be? Bailey said, I was followed out of the kitchen by a medievalist group. I lost them. Or I thought I did. But obviously, at least one of them saw me pass through the plant. My only purpose in doing so, you understand, was to help me lose them. The commissioner considered. Clusar. Was he with them? Bailey nodded. Enderby said, all right, we'll question him. If he's got anything in him, we'll have it out of him. What more can I do, Lige? Wait now, don't quit on me. Do you see my point? Well, let's see if I do. The commissioner clasped his hands. Clusar saw you go into the Williamsburg power plant, or else someone in his group did, and passed the information along to him. He decided to utilize that fact to get you into trouble and off the investigation. Is that what you're saying? It's close to it. Good. The commissioner seemed to warm to the task. He knew your wife was a member of his organization, naturally, and so he knew you wouldn't face a really close probe into your private life. He thought you would resign rather than fight circumstantial evidence. By the way, Lige, what about a resignation? I mean, if things looked really bad, we could keep things quiet. Not in a million years, Commissioner. Enderby shrugged. Well, where was I? Oh, yes. So, he got an alpha sprayer, presumably through a Confederate in the plant, and had another Confederate arrange the destruction of our Sammy. His fingers drummed lightly on the desk. No good, Lige. Why not? Too far-fetched. Too many Confederates. And he has a cast-iron alibi for the night and morning of the Spacetown murder, by the way. We checked that almost right away, though I was the only one who knew the reason for checking that particular time. Bailey said, I never said it was Clusar, Commissioner. You did. It could be anyone in the medievalist organization. Clusar is just the owner of a face that Daniil happened to recognize. I don't even think he's particularly important in the organization. Though there is one queer thing about him. What? Asked Enderby suspiciously. He did know Jesse was a member. Does he know every member in the organization, do you suppose? I don't know. He knew about Jesse anyway. Maybe she was important because she was the wife of a policeman. Maybe he remembered her for that reason. You say he came right out and said that Jezebel Bailey was a member? Just like that? Jezebel Bailey? Enderby nodded. I keep telling you, I heard him. That's the funny thing, Commissioner. Jesse hasn't used her full first name since before Bentley was born. Not once. I know that for certain. She joined the medievalists after she dropped her full name. I know that for sure, too. How would Clusar come to know her as Jezebel, then? The commissioner flushed and said hastily, Oh, well, if it comes to that, he probably said Jesse. I just filled it in automatically and gave her full name. In fact, I'm sure of that. He said Jesse. Until now, you are quite sure he said Jezebel? I asked several times. The commissioner's voice rose. You're not saying I'm a liar, are you? I'm just wondering if Clusar, perhaps, said nothing at all. I'm wondering if you made that up. You've known Jesse for 20 years, and you knew her name was Jezebel.
You're off your head, man!
Am I? Where were you after lunch today? You were out of your office for 2 hours at least.
Are you questioning me?
I'll answer for you, too. You were in the Williamsburg power plant. The commissioner rose from his seat. His forehead glistened, and there were dry white flecks at the corners of his lips.
What the hell are you trying to say?
Weren't you? Bailey, you're suspended. Hand me your credentials. Not yet. Hear me out.
I don't intend to.
You're guilty. You're guilty as the devil. And what gets me is your cheap attempt to make me, look as though I were conspiring against you. He lost his voice momentarily in a squeak of indignation. He managed to gasp out,
In fact, you're under arrest.
No, said Bailey tightly. Not yet. Commissioner, I've got a blaster on you. It's pointed straight and it's cocked. Don't fool with me, please, because I'm desperate and I will have my say. Afterward, you can do what you please. With widening eyes, Julius Enderby stared at the wicked muzzle in Bailey's hands. He stammered,
20 years for this, Bailey. In the deepest prison level in the city.
R. Daniil moved suddenly. His hand clamped down on Bailey's wrist. He said quietly, I cannot permit this, partner Elijah. You must do no harm to the commissioner. For the first time since R. Daniil had entered the city, the commissioner spoke directly to him.
Hold him, you, first law.
Bailey said quickly, I have no intention of hurting him, Daniil, if you will keep him from arresting me. You said you would help me clear this up. I have 45 minutes. R. Daniil, without releasing Bailey's wrist, said, Commissioner, I believe Elijah should be allowed to speak. I am in communication with Dr. Fastolf at this moment.
How? How?
Demanded the commissioner wildly. I possess a self-contained subetheric unit, said R. Daniil. The commissioner stared. I am in communication with Dr. Fastolf, the robot went on inexorably. And it would make a bad impression, commissioner, if you were to refuse to listen to Elijah. Damaging inferences might be drawn. The commissioner fell back in his chair, quite speechless. Bailey said, I say you were in the Williamsburg power plant today, Commissioner, and you got the alpha sprayer and gave it to Arsemi. You deliberately chose the Williamsburg power plant in order to incriminate me. You even seized Dr. Garrigal's reappearance to invite him down to the department and give him a deliberately maladjusted guide rod to lead him to the photographic supply room and allow him to find Arsemi's remains. You counted on him to make a correct diagnosis. Bailey put away his blaster. If you want to have me arrested now, go ahead. But Spacetown won't take that for an answer.
Motive!
Spluttered Enderby breathlessly. His glasses were fogged, and he removed them, looking once again curiously vague and helpless in their absence.
What motive could I have for this?
You got me into trouble, didn't you? It will put a spoke in the Sarton investigation, won't it? And all that aside, our Sammy knew too much.
About what, in heaven's name?
About the way in which a spacer was murdered 5.5 days ago. You see, Commissioner, you murdered Dr. Sarton of Spacetown. It was R. Daniil who spoke. Enderby could only clutch feverishly at his hair and shake his head. The robot said, Partner Elijah, I am afraid that this theory is quite untenable. As you know, it is impossible for Commissioner Enderby to have murdered Dr. Sarton.
Listen, then. Listen to me.
Enderby begged me to take the case, not any of the men who overranked me. He did that for several reasons. In the first place, we were college friends, and he thought he could count on its never occurring to me that an old buddy and respected superior could be a criminal. He counted on my well-known loyalty, you see. Secondly, he knew Jesse was a member of an underground organization and expected to be able to maneuver me out of the investigation or blackmail me into silence if I got too close to the truth. And he wasn't really worried about that. At the very beginning, he did his best to arouse my distrust of you, Daniel, and make certain that the two of us worked at cross purposes. He knew about my father's declassification. He could guess how I would react. You see, it is an advantage for the murderer to be in charge of the murder investigation. The commissioner found his voice. He said weakly, "How could I know about Jesse?" He turned to the robot. "You! If you're transmitting this to Spacetown, tell them it's a lie! It's all a lie!" Bailey broke in, raising his voice for a moment, and then lowering it into a queer sort of tense calm. "Certainly, you would know about Jesse. You're a medievalist, and part of the organization. Your old-fashioned spectacles, your windows, it's obvious your temperament is turned that way. But there's better evidence than that. How did Jesse find out Daniil was a robot? It puzzled me at the time. Of course, we know now that she found out through her medievalist organization. But that just shoves the problem one step backward. How did they know? You, Commissioner, dismissed it with a theory that Daniil was recognized as a robot during the incident at the shoe counter. I didn't quite believe that. I couldn't. I took him for human when I first saw him. And there's nothing wrong with my eyes. Yesterday, I asked Dr. Garrigle to come in from Washington. Later, I decided I needed him for several reasons, but at the time I first called him, my only purpose was to see if he would recognize Daniil for what he was, with no prompting on my part. Commissioner, he didn't. I introduced him to Daniil. He shook hands with him. We all talked together. And it was only after the subject got around to humanoid robots that he suddenly caught on. Now, that was Dr. Garrigle, Earth's greatest expert on robots. Do you mean to say a few medievalist rioters could do better than he under conditions of confusion and tension? And be so certain about it that they would throw their entire organization into activity based on the feeling that Daniil was a robot? It's obvious now that the medievalists must have known Daniil to be a robot to begin with. The incident at the shoe counter was deliberately designed to show Daniil, and through him, Spacetown, the extent of anti-robot feeling in the city. It was meant to confuse the issue, to turn suspicion away from individuals and toward the population as a whole. Now, if they knew the truth about Daniil to begin with, who told them? I didn't. I once thought it was Daniil himself, but that's out. The only other Earthman who knew about it was you, Commissioner. Enderby said, with surprising energy, "There could be spies in the department, too. The medievalists could have us riddled with them. Your wife was one, and if you don't find it impossible that I should be one, why not others in the department?" The corners of Bailey's lips pulled back a savage trifle. "Let's not bring up mysterious spies until we see where the straightforward solution leads us. I say you're the obvious informer and the real one. It's interesting, now that I look back on it, Commissioner, to see how your spirits rose and fell accordingly as I seemed to be far from a solution or possibly close to it. You were nervous to begin with. When I wanted to visit Spacetown yesterday morning and wouldn't tell you the reason, you were practically in a state of collapse. Did you think I had you pinned, Commissioner? That it was a trap to get you into their hands? You hated them, you told me. You were virtually in tears. For a time I thought that to be caused by the memory of humiliations in Spacetown, when you yourself were a suspect. But then Daniil told me that your sensibilities had been carefully regarded. You had never known you were a suspect. Your panic was due to fear, not humiliation. Then, when I came out with my completely wrong solution, while you listened over trimensional circuit, and you saw how far, how immensely far from the truth I was, you were confident again. You even argued with me, defended the spacers. After that, you were quite master of yourself for a while, quite confident. It surprised me at the time that you so easily forgave my false accusations against the spacers, when earlier you had so lectured me on their sensitivity. You enjoyed my mistake. Then I put in my call for Dr. Garrigle, and you wanted to know why, and I wouldn't tell you. That plunged you into the abyss again because you feared... R. Daniil suddenly raised his hand. Partner Elijah. Bailey looked at his watch. 23:42. He said, "What is it?" R. Daniil said, "He might have been disturbed at thinking you would find out his medievalist connections if we grant their existence. There is nothing, though, to connect him with the murder. He cannot have had anything to do with that." Bailey said, "You're quite wrong, Daniil. He didn't know what I wanted Dr. Garrigle for, but it was quite safe to assume that it was in connection with information about robots. This frightened the commissioner, because a robot had an intimate connection with this greater crime. Isn't that so, Commissioner?" Enderby shook his head. "When this is over," he began, but choked into inarticulacy. "How was the murder committed?" demanded Bailey with a suppressed fury. "Seafy, damn it. Seafy. I use your own term, Daniil. You're so full of the benefits of a seafy culture, yet you don't see where an Earthman might have used it for at least a temporary advantage. Let me sketch it in for you. There is no difficulty in the notion of a robot crossing open country, even at night, even alone. The commissioner put a blaster into R. Sammy's hand, told him where to go and when. He himself entered Spacetown through the personal and was relieved of his own blaster. He received the other from R. Sammy's hands, killed Dr. Sarton, returned the blaster to R. Sammy, who took it back across the fields to New York City. And today he destroyed R. Sammy, whose knowledge had become dangerous. That explains everything. The presence of the commissioner, the absence of a weapon. And it makes it unnecessary to suppose any human New Yorker had crawled a mile under the open sky at night." But at the end of Bailey's recitation, R. Daniil said, "I am sorry, Partner Elijah, though happy for the commissioner, that your story explains nothing. I have told you that the cerebro-analytic properties of the commissioner are such that it is impossible for him to have committed deliberate murder. I don't know what English word would be applied to the psychological fact. Cowardice, conscience, or compassion. I know the dictionary meanings of all these, but I cannot judge. At any rate, the commissioner did not murder." "Thank you," muttered Enderby. His voice gained strength and confidence. "I don't know what your motives are, Bailey, or why you should try to ruin me this way, but I'll get to the bottom..." "Wait," said Bailey. "I'm not through. I've got this." He slammed the aluminum cube on Enderby's desk and tried to feel the confidence he hoped he was radiating. For half an hour now, he had been hiding from himself one little fact: that he did not know what the picture showed. He was gambling, but it was all that was left to do. Enderby shrank away from the small object. "What is it?" "It isn't a bomb," said Bailey sardonically. "Just an ordinary micro-projector."
"Well, what will that prove?"
"Suppose we see." His fingernail probed at one of the slits in the cube, and a corner of the commissioner's office blanked out, then lit up in an alien scene in three dimensions. It reached from floor to ceiling and extended out past the walls of the room. It was awash with a gray light of a sort the city's utilities never provided. Bailey thought, with a pang of mingled distaste and perverse attraction, "It must be the dawn they talk about." The pictured scene was of Dr. Sarton's dome. Dr. Sarton's dead body, a horrible, broken remnant, filled its center. Enderby's eyes bulged as he stared. Bailey said, "I know the commissioner isn't a killer." "I don't need you to tell me that, Daniil. If I could have gotten around that one fact earlier, I would have had the solution earlier. Actually, I didn't see a way out of it until an hour ago, when I carelessly said to you that you had once been curious about Bentley's contact lenses. That was it, Commissioner. It occurred to me then that your nearsightedness and your glasses were the key. They don't have nearsightedness on the outer worlds, I suppose. Or they might have reached the true solution of the murder almost at once. Commissioner, when did you break your glasses? The commissioner said, "What do you mean?" Bailey said, "When I first saw you about this case, you told me you had broken your glasses in space-time. I assumed that you broke them in your agitation on hearing the news of the murder. But you never said so. And I had no reason for making that assumption. Actually, if you were entering space-time with crime in your mind, you were already sufficiently agitated to drop and break your glasses before the murder. Isn't that so? And didn't that, in fact, happen?" R. Daniel said, "I do not see the point, partner Elijah." Bailey thought, "I'm partner Elijah for 10 minutes more. Fast, talk fast, and think fast." He was manipulating Sarton's dome image as he spoke. Clumsily, he expanded it, his fingernails unsure in the tension that was overwhelming him. Slowly, in jerks, the corpse widened, broadened, heightened, came closer. Bailey could almost smell the stench of its scorched flesh. Its head, shoulders, and one upper arm lolled crazily, connected to hips and legs by a blackened remnant of spine from which charred rib stumps jutted. Bailey cast a side glance at the commissioner. Enderby had closed his eyes. He looked sick. Bailey felt sick, too, but he had to look. Slowly, he circled the tridimensional image by means of the transmitter controls, rotating it, bringing the ground about the corpse to view in successive quadrants. His fingernail slipped, and the imaged floor tilted suddenly and expanded till floor and corpse alike were a hazy mess, beyond the resolving power of the transmitter. He brought the expansion down, let the corpse slide away. He was still talking. He had to. He couldn't stop till he found what he was looking for. And if he didn't, all his talk might be useless, worse than useless. His heart was throbbing, and so was his head. He said, "The commissioner can't commit deliberate murder." True, deliberate. But any man can kill by accident. The commissioner didn't enter space-town to kill Dr. Sarton. He came in to kill you, Daniel, you. Is there anything in his cerebral analysis that says he is incapable of wrecking a machine? That's not murder, merely sabotage. He is a medievalist, an earnest one. He worked with Dr. Sarton and knew the purpose for which you were designed, Daniel. He feared that purpose might be achieved, that Earthmen would eventually be weaned away from Earth. So he decided to destroy you, Daniel. You were the only one of your type manufactured as yet, and he had good reason to think that by demonstrating the extent and determination of medievalism on Earth, he would discourage the spacers. He knew how strong popular opinion was on the outer worlds to end the Spacetown project altogether. Dr. Sarton must have discussed that with him. This, he thought, would be the last nudge in the proper direction. I don't say even the thought of killing you, Daniel, was a pleasant one. He would have had our Sammy do it, I imagine. If you didn't look so human that a primitive robot such as Sammy could not have told the difference or understood it, first law would stop him. Or the commissioner would have had another human do it if he himself were not the only one who had ready access to Spacetown at all times. Let me reconstruct what the commissioner's plan might have been. I'm guessing, I admit, but I think I'm close. He made the appointment with Dr. Sarton, but deliberately came early, at dawn, in fact. Dr. Sarton would be sleeping, I imagine, but you, Daniel, would be awake. I assume, by the way, you were living with Dr. Sarton, Daniel. The robot nodded. You are quite right, partner Elijah. Bailey said, then let me go on. You would come to the dome door, Daniel, receive a blaster charge in the chest or head, and be done with. The commissioner would leave quickly, through the deserted streets of Spacetown's dawn, and back to where our Sammy waited. He would give him back the blaster, then slowly walk again to Dr. Sarton's dome. If necessary, he would discover the body himself, though he would prefer to have someone else do that. If questioned concerning his early arrival, he could say, I suppose, that he had come to tell Dr. Sarton of rumors of a medievalist attack on Spacetown, urge him to take secret precautions to avoid open trouble between spacers and Earthmen. The dead robot would lend point to his words. If they asked about the long interval between your entering Spacetown, Commissioner, and your arrival at Dr. Sarton's dome, you could say, let's see, that you saw someone lurking through the streets and headed for open country. You pursued for a while. That would also encourage them along a false path. As for Arsami, no one would notice him. A robot among the truck farms outside the city is just another robot. How close am I, Commissioner? Enderby writhed.
I didn't...
No, said Bailey. You didn't kill Daniil. He's here. And in all the time he's been in the city, you haven't been able to look him in the face or address him by name. Look at him now, Commissioner. Enderby couldn't. He covered his face with shaking hands. Bailey's shaking hands almost dropped his transmitter. He had found it. The image was now centered upon the main door to Dr. Sarton's dome. The door was open. It had been slid into its wall receptacle along its shining metal runner grooves. Down within them. There. There. The sparkle was unmistakable. I'll tell you what happened, said Bailey. You were at the dome when you dropped your glasses. You must have been nervous, and I've seen you when you're nervous. You take them off, you wipe them. You did that then. But your hands were shaking, and you dropped them. Maybe you stepped on them. Anyway, they were broken. And just then the door opened, and a figure that looked like Daniil faced you. You blasted him, scrabbled up the remains of your glasses, and ran. They found the body, not you. And when they came to find you, you discovered that it was not Daniil, but the early rising Dr. Sarton that you had killed. Dr. Sarton had designed Daniil in his own image, to his great misfortune. And without your glasses, in that moment of tension, you could not tell them apart. And if you want the tangible proof, it's there. The image of Sarton's dome quivered, and Bailey put the transmitter carefully upon the desk, his hand tightly upon it. Commissioner Enderby's face was distorted with terror, and Bailey's with tension. R. Daniil seemed indifferent. Bailey's finger was pointing. That glitter in the grooves of the door. What was it, Daniil? Two small slivers of glass, said the robot coolly. It meant nothing to us. It will now. They're portions of concave lenses. Measure their optical properties and compare them with those of the glasses Enderby is wearing now. Don't smash them, Commissioner! He lunged at the Commissioner and wrenched the spectacles from the other's hand. He held them out to R. Daniil, panting. That's proof enough. I think that he was at the dome earlier than he was thought to be. R. Daniil said, I am quite convinced. I can see now that I was thrown completely off the scent by the Commissioner's cerebroanalysis. I congratulate you, partner Elijah. Bailey's watch said 2400. A new day was beginning. Slowly the Commissioner's head went down on his arms. His words were muffled wails.
It was a mistake. A mistake. I never meant to kill him.
Without warning, he slipped from the chair and lay crumpled on the floor. R. Daniil sprang to him, saying, You have hurt him, Elijah. That is too bad. He isn't dead, is he? No, but unconscious. He'll come to. It was too much for him, I suppose. I had to do it, Daniil. I had to. I had no evidence that would stand up in court, only inferences. I had to badger him, and let it out little by little, hoping he would break down. He did, Daniil. You heard him confess, didn't you? Yes. Now then, I promised this would be to the benefit of Spacetown's project, so... Wait, he's coming too. The Commissioner groaned. His eyes fluttered and opened. He stared speechlessly at the two. Bailey said, Commissioner, do you hear me? The Commissioner nodded listlessly. All right, Now, the Spacers have more on their minds than your prosecution. If you cooperate with them...
What? What?
There was a dawning flicker of hope in the commissioner's eyes. You must be a big wheel in New York's medievalist organization. Maybe even in the planetary setup. Maneuver them in the direction of the colonization of space. You can see the propaganda line, can't you? We can go back to the soil, all right. But on other planets.
I don't understand,
mumbled the commissioner. It's what the Spacers are after. And God help me, it's what I'm after now, too. Since a small conversation I had with Dr. Fastolf. It's what they want more than anything. They risk death continually by coming to Earth and staying here for that purpose. If Dr. Sarton's murder will make it possible for you to swing medievalism into line for the resumption of galactic colonization, they'll probably consider it a worthwhile sacrifice. Do you understand now? R. Daniel said, Elijah is quite correct. Help us, Commissioner, and we will forget the past. I am speaking for Dr. Fastolf and our people generally in this. Of course, if you should agree to help and later betray us, we would always have the fact of your guilt to hold over your head. I hope you understand that, too. It pains me to have to mention that.
I won't be prosecuted?
Asked the commissioner. Not if you help us. Tears filled his eyes.
I'll do it. It was an accident. Explain that. An accident. I did what I thought right.
Bailey said, if you help us, you will be doing right. The colonization of space is the only possible salvation of Earth. You'll realize that if you think about it without prejudice. If you find you cannot, have a short talk with Dr. Fastolf. And now, you can begin helping by quashing the R. Sammy business. Call it an accident or something. End it. Bailey got to his feet. And remember, I'm not the only one who knows the truth, Commissioner. Getting rid of me will ruin you. All Spacetown knows. You see that, don't you?
R. Daniel said, It is unnecessary to say more, Elijah. He is sincere, and he will help. So much is obvious from his cerebral analysis. All right. Then I'll go home. I want to see Jesse and Bentley and take up a natural existence again. And I want to sleep. Daniil, will you stay on Earth after the Spacers go?
R. Daniil said, I have not been informed. Why do you ask? Bailey bit his lip and said, I didn't think I would ever say anything like this to anyone like you, Daniel. But I trust you. I even admire you. I'm too old ever to leave Earth myself, but when schools for emigrants are finally established, there's Bentley. If someday, perhaps, Bentley and you, together, perhaps. R. Daniel's face was emotionless. The robot turned to Julius Enderby, who was watching them with a flaccid face into which a certain vitality was only now beginning to return. The robot said, I have been trying, friend Julius, to understand some remarks Elijah made to me earlier. Perhaps I am beginning to. For it suddenly seems to me that the destruction of what should not be, that is, the destruction of what you people call evil, is less just and desirable than the conversion of this evil into what you call good. He hesitated. Then, almost as though he were surprised at his own words, he said, Go and sin no more.
Bailey, suddenly smiling, took R. Daniel's elbow. And they walked out the door, arm in arm. End of The Caves of Steel by Isaac Asimov.